Tax day is just around the corner, so we will devote much of today's On Your Money to tax-related information and advice. But not exclusively, your personal finance questions of all kinds are still welcome at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, April the 12th. And joining us, as usual, certified financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, Kevin McKinley. He joins us from our studios in Eau Claire. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Joy.
Are you ready for the tax man?
I am. My youngest daughter, who's in kindergarten, asked my wife and me, she said, "Are our taxes done yet?" And we said, "Why? Have you been contacted by the IRS? You know, what do you know and who have you talked to?"
She wants daddy back, I bet.
That's half of her motivation. She said, "Because you guys are so busy, Juana, taxes are being done. I want them to be done so I can play with you."
You know, I posted a notice that we were going to be talking about tax issues today during On Your Money on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And I said, you know, April 15th is just around the corner, tax day. And I was corrected that April 15th is not tax day today. This year.
That's correct. And it is the great thing about the internet is never has it been so easy for so many people to tell us how wrong we actually are. So it's a wonder of modern technology. Yes, we have several little known facts and figures and trivia regarding taxes in America. And that is the first one. April 18th is actually the tax due date for federal and state filers, and the reasons being is that the IRS follows the District of Columbia holiday schedule, and Saturday, April 16th, is actually a holiday. It's the day that Lincoln freed the slaves, mm-hmm. and so therefore that counts as a holiday that determines the tax day, which moves it up or down the schedule, rather, to April 18th. That's the due for your filing. Your retirement plan contributions, such as IRA, Roth IRA contributions, have to be on their way to their respective custodian, but they just have to be, again, postmarked by April 18th, and you should be fine.
Do people still mail them?
Oh, absolutely. Actually, that's one of the easiest ways to get a contribution, and even in this electronic day and age, because all that needs to be accomplished is to have a postmark of that mm-hmm. date, rather than saying, "Well, we filed this form." And when you're transferring money electronically, it's sometimes more difficult to do so because of the safeguards in place, which are good. But when you're trying to do it quickly, you don't want those safeguards. So sending a check is still usually the easiest way to do that.
All right. So we have until April 18th this year. What else might surprise listeners about taxes?
Well, they might not have to pay any, at least according to figures supplied by the IRS and then assembled by the Tax Foundation. And this is only through 2008. But about 50% of taxpayers pay about 3% of the federal tax bill. That's about a cutoff as adjusted gross income of $33,000. So at that level, that accounts for about half the median level of adjusted gross income, and half the people pay 97% of the federal tax bill. The top 10% of adjusted gross income earners, that's $113,000, they pay about 58% of the federal tax bill. And if you make $380,000 of adjusted gross income, you're in the top 1% of income earners, but you pay 38% of the overall federal tax bill. Now, what the Tax Foundation points out, obviously, is that people in the lower income brackets may not pay a lot or anything of federal taxes, but they do pay a lot of state and local and sales taxes, and especially Social Security and Medicare taxes. Right now, those dollar amounts are actually, in the aggregate, are actually higher than the amount of federal income taxes paid. And the way the government is working right now, the federal government, there's so much back and forth between Treasury securities and bailing out the states, and it all goes into one big pot anyway.
Yeah. So are taxes going up for anyone?
It does seem like that. And if it does seem like that to you, it's usually not because the tax brackets are the tax rates are higher. It's usually because you're a little older and therefore and hopefully your income has gone up over the years. Mm-hmm. If you are older, you also are less likely to have a mortgage, which causes a big loss of that interest deduction. You're less likely to have dependents, hopefully, which causes the loss of that deduction. A little bit of it is inflation, of course. But in terms of the federal income tax bill and related to the amount of income, for about 70 years almost, it's always been right around 13% of income, meaning that the income tax dollars generated by the tax code have been somewhere between usually 11 and 14% of income earned. And that's even with all the moves up and downs in the economy and the stock market and changes in the tax brackets. Almost always, it's been right around 13% for the last 60 or 70 years. And it's typically been right around maybe 18 to 19% of gross domestic product. So even with all the moves and changes in the 77,000 pages of the tax code, we still collect the same ratio of income in both taxes and in terms of GDP.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're hearing a lot these days about the budget and the federal deficit. Will federal deficits lead to taxes going up in the future?
Probably. It will probably lead to higher tax rates or less things escaping taxation. But that's not the biggest issue for most people. It is if your dollars paid in taxes are going to go up. And we're going to talk about that later on the show, what you can do to make sure you're paying as little as possible and legally in taxes. But for the time being, if you're concerned about the deficit, there used to be a spot on the 1040 that you could check off if you wanted part of your refund or your tax bill to go to pay down the deficit. You could check this box, and some of it would go to it for whatever amount you indicated. That's gone. You can still pay for it with a tax-deductible payment to the Treasury. They raised about $2 million last year that people said, I want to donate money to pay down the debt. And there is a similar feature on the state of Wisconsin individual income tax form where the checkoff boxes. I think there are about a dozen now different sources that allow you to have money from your refund sent directly to these organizations in an amount which you choose, like the Packers Stadium or Second Harvest Food Bank, Veterans Administration. And you may be hearing about this more because there's some question over whether that space on the Wisconsin taxpayer forum should be used to help fund the cost of state Supreme Court campaigns.
Oh, that's right. Hey, Kevin, remind me, I had someone do my taxes because I'm not very good at it. I got a credit of some sort, I think, on my federal income tax because of the stimulus money. I actually got what did I get? $400 from the stimulus money. So, you know, I paid a little less in taxes.
Yeah, I took the liberty of accessing your taxes online, and there's a couple things I want to talk about, a few concerns I have. Probably, and many people did. That's one of those politically popular in the short-term moves that people really don't notice as much. That's something else we're going to feel a little bit this year. Paychecks probably seem a little higher because there's been a temporary reduction in the amount of Social Security tax taken out of earners' paychecks. That will go away. And of course, if you've filled up your gas tank or bought food in the last few weeks, you know that cut is not nearly offset by your higher cost of living. So hopefully it'll have some effect. I don't think it will, but let's see.
Kevin McKinley is the managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, a registered investment advisor with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. Kevin does not intend to provide personalized investment advice through this broadcast and does not represent that the securities or services discussed are suitable for any investor. Investors should consult with their financial advisors prior to making any investment decisions. That being said, if you have a question for Kevin about tax-related issues or any personal finance issue, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org.
Wait, oh yes, wait a minute, Mr. Boseman. Wait, wait.
And it is time now for our On Your Money email box, and we have received questions from a couple of listeners who say that they will owe money to the IRS for the 2010 tax year, but Kevin, they can't pay it all right now. So what should they or can they do?
They should arm themselves
and
not at all. It's a very understandable situation, and it's something that this will probably be a record year for the number of people who do owe taxes but cannot pay it, just don't have the money right now. First of all, you definitely need to file. You need to send it in. You need to contact the IRS and say, I know that I owe you money. I have filed my taxes on time, and I understand that. However, I can't pay it. Once you explain the situation to them, again, you will not be the only person to call that minute to say, I don't have the money for it. The IRS will kind of break down some of the different options you have to pay up.
You know, what can you do to try to come up with the money?
Well, it depends on the amount of money and your resources. Some people, you can pay them by credit card if you want, and that's usually the most convenient way to pay it. Of course, that means that you have a new debt to pay, and there are some fees on that can be higher than if you were just to send a check, obviously. You may want to look at tapping your home equity line of credit if you have one and have availability. You might want to just approach a bank or a credit union and see if you can get a consumer loan, and especially if it's just for a few $1,000s, the interest rate's probably going to be 10-12%, but that again can still be cheaper than going through the IRS and the payment plan. You might want to get a loan against your car if you have an expensive paid for car. You can pull money out of your Roth IRA, the contribution portion, with no taxes or penalties at any time. Or you might want to try to get a loan against your 401k if you have that opportunity to do so at work.
And if there is just no money available at all?
The IRS does have financing options, and especially if it's just a few $1,000s, there may be little or nothing in penalties or interest charges, and they may even just say, well, I'll tell you what, we're going to give you another 120 days to pay that. If it's a lot more than that, they can set you up on an installment plan, but there are going to be costs to do that. There's going to be interest charge. There's cost to process each repayment that you make, and if you are going to get any refunds in the future and you still owe money to the IRS, guess where that refund is actually going to go?
Where?
To the IRS.
I know.
Pay off the money that you owe.
Right. We are talking with Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner, Managing Member of McKinley Money, LLC. If you have a question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I work hard for my money. Take it all away. Don't you know I work hard for my money?
It is a tax day edition of On Your Money this week. Kevin McKinley has lots of tax-related information and advice during this hour, but he also has an answer to your non-tax-related personal finance question, too. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. And our first caller, Kevin, is Jess in Madison. Hi, Jess.
Hi. I'm calling with a tax question for your guest. I have heard from various people that parking expenses related to work are a tax deduction, and I spend about $130 to $150 a month in parking expenses to park at work. And I haven't actually read the tax code, but I was just wondering if you have an answer for whether or not that is considered a valid tax deduction.
Parking at work, do you know, Kevin?
Generally, I think it's on IRS Form 2016 or something like that. Where you have a harder time getting away with that are the tax trying to deduct the cost of your parking tickets, and especially in some kind of weird hedge investment strategy, letting those tickets accumulate unpaid, and then so the dollar is higher or something. You can try it. the expenses related to personal use, commuting and things like that, you generally can't deduct. It's usually only if you're driving your car actually for mileage. One of the things that, you know, beyond the tax code, Jess, is that when people are trying to take deductions of this, first of all, the only way that you're going to get in trouble for this is if you get audited. And people who make less than $200,000 generally have maybe a 1 in 150 chance of getting audited. Now, that said, I would not want to be the person sitting across the table from an IRS auditor saying that, you know, these are my parking expenses, this is why. For people who do get audited, they generally have to provide proof of these expenses and why they took them as a deduction for it. So the tickets and commuting, you probably can't. The check on that form, it's 2106, I believe, and see if that fits in for it. And even then, it might, you know, you have to itemize, et cetera. And there's probably someone listening who can call in and say for sure. But offhand, you can try it. I'm not sure how much you're going to save and if it's worth the hassle if you do get audited.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Jess. Alex in Oshkosh emails, I belong to a not-for-profit group that has about $6,000 that we put into a money market account as we are saving it for future projects. Are there any better ways to earn a little bit on a small amount like this? We do want to have access to this money every 2 to 5 years.
One of the biggest mistakes that many people are making right now is trying to do exactly what she's doing, and it's understandable, but it can lead to a big problem if it's your own money and you're taking on a lot of risk to get a little bit of extra return, and it can lead to even more trouble if you're technically doing it with an organization's money. It's not yours. So several people within the organization, people who may donate it to the organization in the future, could also be upset if you mismanage that. The smartest thing to do is to go to a bank or credit union, take out the longest term, highest paying certificate of deposit that they offer, and then make sure that the institution just has a smaller penalty for early withdrawal, usually 6 to 12 months. And you're probably only going to get, in these times, maybe 2.5% to 3% at the most. But if you're getting more than that, you probably have an investment that is actually pretty risky. You know, 30-year treasuries only pay about 4.5% interest right now. And that investment itself has a lot of risk in terms of time and interest rate fluctuation. So it's a noble gesture, but in terms of trying to generate a few more dollars in interest, it's just not worth the risk.
All right, Alex, I hope that helps. And our next caller is Chris in Madison. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a question about the optional method for figuring the self-employment tax. I've been self-employed for over 10 years now, but I now watch my daughter during the day. Quite a few days a week, so my income has gone down, and it's gone down to the point where I don't get, if I figure my self-employment tax using the regular method, I wouldn't get all 4 credits. They give you up to 4 credits a year toward figuring, you know, your eligibility for Social Security. Now, I already have over 40 credits because I've been working long enough, and research I did online says that all you need is 40 credits. You don't need any more than that. So would there be any reason, Social Security-wise, I know there's some other ramifications for child tax credit and stuff, but I'm not worried about that. But Social Security-wise, would there be any reason for me to figure it using the optional method and pay more if I've already got the 40 credits?
So you're not concerned as much about income taxes, Chris. You're concerned about the Social Security tax, if you will, right?
Right, and I don't want to jeopardize my Social Security just because of this temporary dip in my income, but I don't think I will because I think I already have enough credits. Obviously, you know, my income would be down, and that would go into figuring my Social Security benefits, but by the time I'm 20 years or more, 25 years from Social Security, so I'd have plenty of time to make that up. I just want to make sure that, from what I can tell looking online, there'd be no reason really for me to use the optional method.
No, and if it's only if your earnings are less than $400, your net earnings, and your gross earnings are $600 or more, or if you have less than, I think it's like $1,200 or $1,600 in profit, you can only use it a few times in your life, and it's basically when you have little or no money on top of it. They use, right now anyway, they use the highest 35 years of earnings for calculating your Social Security benefits. So I hope that this isn't one of those highest 35 years, but that said, the actual dollar amount is so tiny in the difference between, I mean, it's, you know, again, it's only 1/35th of the figuring into the calculation. So if you got the 40 credits, I think you're fine. In terms of how it'll affect your earnings, I don't think it will, or your payments rather in retirement, I don't think it'll affect it much. So yeah, I'd go with that.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. Thanks very much, Chris, for the call. If you have a question for Kevin, we have an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. And while this is a program where Kevin is sharing a lot of information about taxes with tax day coming upon us, your question does not have to deal with taxes. Any personal finance question is welcome at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. And Karen in Milwaukee is our next caller. Hello, Karen.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I'm just calling to see if Kevin has a recommendation for how to find a certified financial planner in the Milwaukee area.
I think you can go to, if you Google CFP, and it's cfpnet.org, I think they have a search engine for certified financial planners that will tell you who's in your geographic area, and then have a link, maybe some discussion on what they specialize in, and you might take it might go directly to their website. And then when you're talking to those people, you do want to find someone who specializes hopefully in your specific situation, but also has a similar philosophy and goals and values of what you're trying to achieve. And one of the questions, the first questions you should ask anyone, CFP or not, who is giving you financial advice is, how do you get paid? And how much is that? And if that fee is appropriate for you, for what you're trying to get, it's usually a pretty good way to go. They'll generally charge you either an hourly basis, much like a lawyer or a CPA would charge, or if they have an ongoing relationship, usually then what they'll do is they'll charge a percentage of assets that they manage for you. And then generally, there should be no extra fees or expenses on top of that, or hidden commissions. They usually have to declare those for you. But it really depends on your goals. And then finally, if you are going to have an ongoing relationship with some type of financial advisor, ask that person, why might I be unhappy with your services? People who sell things for a living, whether it's their own advice or expertise or cars or whatever, are very good at telling you what they're good at and why you like them. But the question of why you may not like them is usually more revealing as to the question of why you might like them.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Karen. And that website would help anybody in the state of Wisconsin or elsewhere, I suppose. It's not just Milwaukee. Kevin.
That's correct. Yeah. And we'll have a link up to the site up at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
And it's time now for Smart Assets. And Kevin, you are saying that the best way to cut our taxes now and later might also be the easiest?
You know, many people, that's one of their biggest concerns is I'm paying too much in taxes, or I want to make sure I'm paying as little in taxes as possible. And one of the easiest ways to do that for most people, especially people who are still working, is to just maximize your retirement savings plan. This can be an at-work pre-tax plan like a 401k or a 403b or a TSA. And then even if you say, well, I'm doing all that, there are still several different missed opportunities that people have to cut their taxes while they are really only moving money from one jar to another. They might be moving it from their paycheck to a 401k or from a savings account to an IRA. And so there are several different ways that they can use those earnings to cut their taxes.
Are there limits on contributions?
The limits are for most people are difficult to achieve. I shouldn't say most people. Usually about 80% of people don't contribute as much as they can. But in an at-work plan like a 401k or 403b, it's usually the lesser of your income or $16,500 per year. And then if you're over 50, it's $22,000. For IRAs and Roth IRAs, it's $5,000 or your income, whichever is less, or $6,000 if you're over 50. And finally, for a lot of people, they can use things like HSAs, healthcare savings accounts. The limits on those are $3,000 or so for an individual and $6,000 for a family.
And what are the missed opportunities to save on taxes by saving for retirement?
Well, it first of all is Roth IRAs. Many people who max out their 401ks or 403bs forget or don't think they qualify for a Roth IRA. They still do, even on top of that, as long as their adjusted gross income is low enough, and that's about 170 or so for married couples and about 105 or so for singles. They can also open up IRAs or Roth IRAs for their spouses. Even if there was no earned income, it's still the same limits, but as long as one spouse has enough earned income, they can make a spousal IRA or Roth IRA contribution. And then again, those HSAs, you can deposit enough into a healthcare savings account that even exceeds the amount of the deductible of your high deductible healthcare plan. So by using an HSA, the money goes in pre-tax. It comes out tax-free to pay qualified medical expenses. Usually that's your deductible. But it rolls over from year to year, so it's not a use-it-or-lose-it proposition. And then when you turn 65, any money that's left in the HSA account can either be pulled out tax-free for other medical expenses, or it just becomes an IRA. So you've deferred taxes all those years in the HSA on both the contributions and any earnings, and then you can pull it out like an IRA when you retire. And usually, not only does that save you in taxes, but the high deductible plan saves you in health insurance premiums as well.
So, Kevin, what would you say to people who point out that retirement savings contributions don't reduce Social Security or Medicare taxes, or that they're worried that tax rates could be even higher in the future?
That's an interesting dilemma and point. First of all, I think tax rates themselves, the tax code might be higher. But by saving more for retirement now, that allows you to do a couple of things which will cut your taxes in the future. First of all, if you have retired, you are not paying into Social Security and Medicare anymore, which is the biggest chunk of taxes for many people because you're not earning any money, you're not paying into that automatically. And again, you don't get to defer any of those taxes while you're actually earning money. And second of all, by saving more now, it gives you more money that's tax sheltered so you can retire sooner. And when you retire, as many retired people are finding out, you can manipulate your income withdrawals from several different sources like Social Security, IRAs, Roth IRAs, earnings, savings, home equity, whatever, so that you can get the income that you need in retirement but stay in the lower portion of the tax brackets. You can't go to your boss and say, hey, you normally pay me $50,000 a year. Do me a favor. Pay me $25,000 this year and $75,000 next year because overall I'll pay less in taxes than if you paid me as you planned. But you can do that when you retire. You can manipulate your income flow so that you can reduce your income tax bill.
I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner, and you're listening to On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. To more of your calls now at 1-800-642-1234 or send your question to onyourmoney at WPR.org. And Kathy in Appleton is with us. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead, please.
My question is, for a four-year period, I had a slump in my income, and I wasn't able to contribute the full amount to my Roth IRA account. And for 2010, I put the full amount in, but now that my income's back up, can I go back and deposit into those years that I didn't put enough in?
If only that were true, Kathy. Are you over 50?
No, I'm not quite.
Okay. You sound sad about that.
Yeah, be happy.
Trust me. The extra benefit of being over 50. Yeah. No, you can't do that. And for better or for worse, it does usually mean that you've missed out on the opportunity to make the contribution. But the only true benefit to making a Roth IRA contribution is that the future earnings on the account are not going to be taxed, and the money pulled out of it does not, under today's laws, does not make your Social Security taxable in retirement. So yes, it would be nice if you could put the money in there. What I would rather have you do, though, is probably put it in a similar mutual fund than if you were or investment, if you will, that you would use if you could have made that contribution. And then you'll still get some growth from it, hopefully over the long term. And then you can slide that money over on a year-to-year basis to make the contributions to the Roth IRA. It's a good question, good thought, but I'm sorry you're out of luck.
Thank you.
No, sorry, Kathy. I've not made full contributions either, so no retroactive contributions, Kevin.
Oh, I think if I could turn back the clock, that would not be my primary reason to do so.
Patricia emails, if I made no money in the last 2 years, do I have to file a tax form? I have been unable to work, and I am now on SSDI since March of this year. I have no income from any source. I live with my brother, who luckily has taken me in. I'm sorry, Patricia, but does she have to file a tax form if she's making no money and on, well, since March on SSDI?
Probably not. It can be it can be a requirement in some cases. She should go to the free tax helpline that the IRS has to check and make sure. I doubt it without having to go into too much of her situation. There is actually income limits, which especially for people who are on some type of assistance or more commonly retired, there actually are income limits that are fairly generous. That means you actually don't have to file taxes for it. We'll put the links up to who has to file and who doesn't, and along with the link to the IRS helpline at onyourmoney.com later on today so that she can figure that out.
Kevin McKinley stays with us, certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. He will have for us next a money-saving tip for taxes and more answers to your personal finance questions if you call 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is a tax time edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine, along with financial planner Kevin McKinley, who has a money-saving tip for taxes for us during this segment of the program. And Kevin, you say it involves spending less money. How does that work?
Well, there are several people and groups who would like to see us return from an income tax basis structure to a consumption tax. But I argue that we're already there in part because what you spend can really determine how much you actually end up paying in taxes. A typical American household spends about $65,000 or so in a year, and about $16,000 of that, according to the census, is comprised of various types of taxes. And if you spend a lot more than that, you can end up paying a lot more in taxes.
I'm not sure I know what you mean.
Well, let's start with income taxes. If you spend more money, that generally means you need to earn more money to cover that spending. The more money that you earn, the higher that your income tax bracket will be, because you'll move up from the 15% to the 25% to 28%, et cetera, on. Especially if it's money that you need to spend on a month-to-month basis, that's money you can't defer into those IRAs and 401ks and 403bs we discussed. Mm-hmm. And if you're spending that money and you can't defer it, not only are you not able to cut your taxes in that given year, but you can't retire. And then you can't get to that golden age where you get to manipulate your income so that you can pay less taxes upon retirement.
Okay, I get it. What are some other ways spending more would mean more taxes?
Well, as many people are finding out, by moving on up and keeping up with the Joneses, you are buying a higher priced home. Whether you pay cash or you have a fixed mortgage, generally the biggest expense that you have is property taxes, which can be deductible if you itemize. But still, you still have to pay those property taxes. Wisconsinites typically pay about 4 to 5% or so of their income in property taxes. It's usually about 1/50th of the value of the home per year, and it's a number that only seems to be going in one direction, up. And ironically, the higher the property taxes go on an individual house, the harder it is to sell, the harder it is to get the money back that you paid into it, much less make a profit off of it.
You know, I certainly thought of the sales tax as a way that spending more will increase what you pay on taxes. And that's true, right, Kevin?
Absolutely. Mm. And many municipalities that are struggling to cover their basic cost are going to be forced to make drastic cuts and or raise the amount of sales taxes that they pay. And when things are inflating, and you know, when you're paying, let's say, a sales tax on milk, and it's, you know, $2 a gallon or whatever, taxes aren't that bad. Milk is now $4 a gallon. So if you were to be taxed on that purchase, you're paying twice as much in dollars along with twice as much in the price of it. At 5% or so on the sales tax, the average Wisconsin household typically pays probably $200 to $300 in sales taxes right now. With prices rising, that number is bound to go up. So if you can cut your spending and what is going out of your pocket at the grocery store or at retail stores, you're also going to cut the amount of sales tax that you're going to pay as well. One of the biggest sources of sales tax costs for people is generally a new car.
Mm-hmm.
And if you buy a new car and pay sales tax on the purchase and then trade it in a few years, you pay sales tax again on that. So if you buy a lower cost car, you obviously have lower sales taxes on it. And the longer that you drive it, that's one more year or mile that you don't pay sales taxes on that pretty big purchase.
Sounds good. And we will take more calls now for financial planner Kevin McKinley during this tax time edition of On Your Money, though your question does not have to be related to taxes. Many are, though. Jim in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Jim.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead, Jim.
Oh, yes, I'm a courier, independent courier. I get a 1099 each year. I don't have to pay taxes because my mileage exceeds my income. In other words, say I earn I drive 100,000 miles to make the figures easy, and it's 50 cents a gallon, 50 cents a mile for your mileage deduction. That comes out to a $50,000 tax break, and I don't make that much. They don't pay me that much. So I'm wondering, how long can you go on making a paper loss?
You mean as an entity or as a business?
Well, I mean, it's just a self-employed person, you know. Because
sure.
Typically it doesn't cost me 50 cents a mile to run my vehicle, but the government gives me that 50 cent a mile deduction.
Okay. Now, and you're asking if you needed to file or if the IRS is going to have a question about your operations.
Well, I'm asking if I talked to the IRS and they said something about it. Well, you've got a paper loss, but I'm just curious as to if it is a paper loss, can you just keep on doing that every year? Because for 3 years in a row now, my mileage has exceeded my income. They don't really pay that much. And you get paid one way. So your mileage, if you're paid, 60 cents a mile and you drive 100 miles, actually you're driving 200 miles because you don't get paid coming back.
Yep. Yep. But you're still getting paid. And so you
I understand I'm getting paid, but when I do the final thing, I put my mileage in, it shows I lost $5,000.
Yeah. Sure. Jim, are you just trying to figure out that, that you're not doing something wrong? You're not ripping off the government?
Yeah, I'm just trying to see if that's something that is not, after a while, can you keep on being in a business that has a paper loss? How long can you keep in a business that has a paper loss like that?
Well, technically, you can do it indefinitely, but it does trigger scrutiny from the IRS more so if you do try to bring these losses every single year from a paper loss. You still do need to file if you have self-employment income. I think the amount is more than $400 that's earnings for it, so you would need to file it. And that's true of, oftentimes if you're just mowing lawns or something like that in the neighborhood for a few hundred bucks, that counts as self-employment income. And so if it's more than $400, you do have to file. So I would file for it. If you're concerned about the IRS, you know, auditing, that's a chance that everyone takes. There are only a few people who get audited of your situation every single year. So, and I think, you know, if you say, well, this is what I did and why I did it, and this is why I took the loss, audits, and we, you know, everybody gets nervous about anything from the IRS. The IRS just wants you to pay what you owe. They do not, you know, it's, they don't treat it like it's their money, that they don't get a, you know, a contingency fee on the more amount of money that they collect. They just want to make sure that people are paying what they owe according to the tax code, no more, no less. And that's why they send you a refund. If you get audited, you better have documentation as to why you took certain deductions and the costs and why you figured out your income or loss as you did. And that's really the best that you can do. You may want to check with a CPA to see if you're doing this appropriately for your business, for it. But no, businesses do lose money on an ongoing basis. It just is a question if it's legitimate or not.
Thank you, Jim, and good luck to you. Pam in Hartford is with us. Hello, Pam.
Yes, we have a daughter that's a college student, and we did claim her this year. However, she worked in our state as well, is where she goes to school. And we're just trying to decide if she really needs to file or does not.
Because she...
Oh, that's a good question. Mm-hmm. So you mean you're filing as herself? You mean,
yes. Whether she needs to file herself, being that we've already filed and claimed her as a dependent. If she needs to take that time to, because obviously she'll have to file for Wisconsin and she'll have to file the state where she goes to school because she works there.
Sure. Do you know how much she made in that job?
Well, I think combined it was less than, I think it was between $3,000 and $4,000.
Okay, because I think the cutoff is about $5,000 or so before they would have to file as an independent. They might lose things. I mean, that's another thing. People, there are a lot of benefits and credits that come back to people who do file. And so sometimes the amount of pain of going ahead and filing, especially if you might qualify for some of these bonuses or benefits, is definitely worth it. So she probably does not have to file because she did not make enough money to qualify. If she made over, I think it's $5,000 or $5,150, something like that, then she probably would have to file a tax return. But I don't think so on what you've told me, but I would still contact a tax professional or the IRS to make sure. I'm wondering, Joy, if we're going to be getting, you know, subpoenaed or something several years down the road from people said, I listened to this idiot on this radio show and he said I didn't have to file. And
that's
we'll
why you should, you should contact your own financial advisor or tax man.
and when you say that there are other benefits of filing, like other deductions, when we got on to look, we didn't really see any because we were just going to file online through the IRS site. As a student, for instance, she had all scholarships that paid for her tuition, so she didn't have any of those costs to deduct.
Okay. And that's another thing, maybe not in your case, Pam, but in other people's cases, sometimes grants or scholarships that are used for room and board might be included as income, or work study programs might include it as well. So the college student and dependent and earned income, it can be kind of tricky. So this might be a good year at least to get some advice from. Are you doing your taxes yourself or are you using a professional?
Well, we have a business, so ours were done by our accountant.
Okay.
Quite a while ago, actually. So.
Okay, I would actually run it by the accountant. That's why you're paying him or her, too. So and he or she will have that answer as it applies to your specific situation.
Okay, great.
All right, thank you, and good luck, Pam.
Thanks, Pam.
We have Tom in Milwaukee who is next. Hello, Tom.
Hello. I was wondering, if you plan on filing late and anticipate a refund, do you need to file an extension?
Plan to file late and anticipate a refund. Yes, you should. The IRS really likes those forms in by the 18th or so. Just file first, get it in. And are you planning to file late for a reason or?
We're going on vacation.
The IRS firmly believes that people should take as much personal time as they need, and if the weather's nice and you stay another week, that's also just get a note from your travel agent.
He's kidding, Tom.
All right, thank you.
Definitely file, get it in on time, or at least file to get an extension as well. Getting an extension is very, very common, and it's fairly easy to do, and it does buy you lots of extra time to do this. Some people I know plan on doing this every single year, if only because they get, you know, they get 6 extra months to prepare their statements, but they get the time of not only CPAs, but tax people, or if they need statements from banks or credit unions or mutual funds or whatever, it's so much easier to get that information after April 15th or 18th, as the case may be this year. So, yes, definitely file an extension, but then you can enjoy your vacation.
All right, Tom. Go ahead.
Thank you. I was going to say, is that required for state and federal?
It's always a good idea.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Tom. Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, it only takes, if somebody does it who knows what they're doing, it only takes a short amount of time typically to do the taxes. But I suppose they're very busy right this time of year, Kevin, in terms of tax preparers and CPAs and the like.
They are, and I'm very thankful that, like many tax preparers, this is our busiest time of the year. I consider myself very fortunate to be able to do this for a living, but that's it. I'm swamped until I actually talk to real CPAs and tax preparers, because I'm on vacation compared to the amount of work that they're doing right now.
Yeah. Here's a non-tax email. Steve in Kewaunee emails, how is the minimum distribution for IRAs calculated when one retires? I have numerous IRAs and SEPs, and the time is getting near.
Hmm. Okay, well, by time, I hope that he means
retirement time.
Retirement time, right. You have to begin taking money from that. You can take it generally after 59 and a half without a penalty. You do pay taxes on it, but you take it without a penalty. You have to begin taking the money out, and this is kind of confusing, but it's April 1st of the year after you turn 70 and a half to meet your required minimum distribution. So if you turn 70 in March of 2010, you'll turn 70 and a half in December, or of 2011 rather, you'll turn 70 and a half in September of 2011, you'd have to begin taking your first distribution by April 1st of 2012. The problem with doing that is you then have to take another distribution from that same account by the end of the same year. So if you're not careful, you can end up having to be forced to take two distributions in one calendar year or one tax year, and then pay taxes on it as well. You have to take the entire amount of all your IRAs and add them together to determine your required minimum distribution. And at the age of 70 or so, what happens is there's a life expectancy that the IRS has for you, or at least people your age, and then you take a tiny percentage out, usually 3-4%, based on how old you are, of that value. That is taxable. It's very important you take that money out, because if you don't, you miss the deadline. Not only do you still have to take it out again, but then there's a 50% excise tax on the amount you were supposed to take out. So if you were supposed to take out, say, $5,000, and you missed the required minimum distribution deadline, you would have to pay a $2,500 federal excise tax, and then still take the $5,000 out and still pay income taxes on it as well. So it's very important that you coordinate those withdrawals, so you're getting at least the minimum amount out.
Kevin, our deadline is approaching. What's the website of the week?
Well, if you want to find out where your federal tax dollars are going, go to thirdway.org, tell them how much you paid in federal taxes, and they will give you back a receipt that shows you where each one of those dollars went. Thirdway.org, and we'll have that website up at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
And four more words before we go.
Spend less, have more.
Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner, Managing Member of McKinley Money, LLC. This is On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.